website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, the Parkside Wind Ensemble and Community Band will perform at Bedford Concert Hall Thursday, December 7th at 7 p.m. Admission is $10. $5 for seniors and Parkside students are free.
Support comes from Kenosha Winter Harbor Market, featuring Angelic Bakehouse, offering non-GMO sprouted grain breads, including 7-grain whole wheat, rye, and honey wheat with raisins. Flatbreads, wraps, and buns also available. The market is open Saturdays from 10 until 2 at the Rhodey. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Linda Fleshinsky, a mother, grandmother, freelance writer, and former Racine School Board president. And now, here's today's host.
And good morning. This is Jim McClure, your host today for Community Matters. And our guest today covers quite a bit of territory in Walworth County. He's Jim Weiss, who is the village administrator for Williams Bay in the northwest corner of Geneva Lake. And then the town of Lynn, he is the chairman there, which surprisingly, for people outside of the area and for some people inside the area, the town of Lynn comprises like 63% of the shoreline around Geneva Lake. So a man for all seasons. We're going to be talking with Jim about things that, you know, don't tune out if you're outside Walworth County, because a lot of what we're talking about has to do with Racine and Kenosha counties, especially when we get into how this area is affected by the news at Foxconn and all the other economic news in the area. It's going to be a real interesting 45 minutes, so we appreciate you tuning in to Community Matters. And Jim Weiss, let me say with my heartfelt thanks, we've wanted to do this for some time, and you've made yourself available after a very busy legislative time in both places. So, Jim, welcome to Community Matters.
Thank you, Jim. Happy to be here today.
You bet. And, you know, we always try and educate the people that listen in. Public affairs shows me to do little if we aren't serving that public and telling them things that they might not know. And first of all, let's talk about the areas that you cover within the administrative. Can you kind of sum up, you know, the town of Lynn and also the village of Williams Bay and how they're interrelated in terms of how you came to have an administrative position with both?
Sure, Jim. Thank you. Well, the town of Lynn, I moved to the town of Lynn with my wife back in 1999. And after we moved here, probably about 2000 or 2001, I decided to get involved in government and looked for a committee or commission to join in the town of Lynn. So I joined the Harbor Commission. Was on that for a year or two, and then a vacancy came up on the Plan Commission in the town of Lynn. And so I said, maybe I'll try the Plan Commission. So then I was appointed to the Plan Commission. A few months later, a board seat became available, and people encouraged me to apply for the board seat. I did apply for the board seat in 2003 and have been sitting on the town of Lynn board since 2003 and have been the chairman of the town of Lynn since 2009.
And then Williams Bay, when did that come to the fore, as if you didn't have enough to do in town of Lynn?
Well, Williams Bay, what had happened, Jim, my background was in banking for many years. And in 2009, I left banking. And that's when, you know, things sort of took a turn for the worse in the economic. I was a chief lending officer for a local financial institution. And I said, I don't want to do banking anymore after about 25 years. And so I sat down with my wife and I said, you know, I wanted to own my own business and I wanted to wear jeans. I'd never had the opportunity to wear jeans for work before in my life. And so what we did was we bought a frozen pizza manufacturing facility called Champion Pizza in Hebron, Illinois. Operated that until 2015 we over tripled the sales and modernized the business. And as people would say, we got an offer one couldn't refuse of somebody that came in and said they wanted to buy the business from a venture capital company. And so we opted to take the money. And at that point in time, it was time to regroup and, you know, find my next chapter in life. At the end of 2015, the administrator in the Village of Williams Bay, who had been here for 30 plus years, Bob Carlson, their first and only administrator, announced his retirement effective the middle of 2016. And being that it was local and I had some history and knowledge of the area that I felt would be beneficial and be applicable to the Village of Williams Bay, threw my hat in the ring for the administrator job, and lo and behold, I began work here on March 1st of 2016.
And do you get to wear jeans in both those positions, or do you have to dress up a little every now and then?
Business casual is what we prefer, Jim. So the jeans have been put behind me a little bit, but that's okay. Weekends are here.
Before you came to to Town of Lynn in 2009, were you doing civic activities there, or was this the first time you got involved in those sort of things?
It's the first time I got involved in local government. Back when I was living in the Chicagoland area in Downers Grove and Lyle, I was always members of different civic organizations and, the Lions Club, the Rotary Club, the local Chamber of Commerce, things of that sort. So I've always had active involvement, which, you know, went hand in hand with being in the banking industry, that you wanted to be out there to get to know your neighbors, get to know your businesses, get to know the people in the neighborhood. So I always felt that was very beneficial and just sort of took a different focus when I got involved in the town of Lynn.
I've always said that it's probably true more of Walworth County, although perhaps a little bit of the Kenosha area. But I've always felt that this area, I don't know if it happened in continental drift thousands of years ago or recently, but it seems like this is part of the North Shore of Chicago or McHenry County that just kind of drifted up over the border a little bit. So I'm going to ask a little bit quickly about Lyle, because we probably have some people that come from up there. Lyle makes sense for a boy who went to Illinois Benedictine. Didn't you get a degree from there at some point?
I got my master's degree from Benedictine University back, oh God, in the 90s sometime. I can't remember the date, probably around 96 or so, when I was working for Citizens National Bank in Downers Grove and Boulevard Bank Corp. They put me to graduate school. So for probably 3 years of my life at nights, attended Benedictine University to get a master's degree in finance.
Wow. Okay. Which means I just missed you by about 7 years. But we probably had dinner at the same place on the same evening in Naperville along the Riverwalk or whatever. All right. So you've gotten to this point in your dual career, give or take a pizza and a few Deutschmarks or dollars at the bank. It took a while, but it seemed like fairly recently you were getting quite a bit of guff, both in person and in the papers, for can you really handle two places at once, and also conflict of interest. How can you represent two at once? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there's a distinctive difference between my position in the town of Lynn and my position in the Village of Williams Bay. In the town of Lynn, I'm an elected official, and I'm a decision maker. I sit on the town board, and we set policy. We make the decisions. We vote on those decisions, and, you know, we enforce things from 10,000 feet, if you will. So over in the town of Lynn, I'm an elected official, and you sort of direct your department heads and your people that are underneath you. In the Village of Williams Bay, I am not an elected official. I do not live in the Village of Williams Bay. I live in the town of Lynn. Here, I do not, you know, I do not have a vote when it comes to setting policy or changing ordinances or instituting resolutions. That function is of our village board of seven people. what I do is I am the support system for those seven village trustees, and I take direction from them. So therefore, it's not like I am running both municipalities. I am just really the day-to-day business manager or administrator, as the title is, in the Village of Williams Bay, which creates a distinct difference in the two positions. When there was concern regarding the two, I will state both the village board does not find it a conflict. As a matter of fact, they find great benefit in having the knowledge that I have of not only the town of Lynn, but understanding the Geneva Lake area. This is a very unique area that operates different than many other areas. So there's a lot of things that have been implemented in Williams Bay that are best practices that we found in the town of Lynn, and vice versa. We've implemented a number of things in the town of Lynn that we found from best practices in the village of Williams Bay. So I think it's benefiting both municipalities by having me learn, because in the town of Lynn, we have, you know, only limited day-to-day operations people. Now I'm getting a heck of an education being an administrator over here in the village of Williams Bay. Also, it was asked at the point in time when there was concern regarding the conflict to go to the Towns Association, and at that point in time, our attorney in the town of Lynn went to the Wisconsin Towns Association and asked the question directly, is it a conflict of interest? And their answer was, no, it is not, as long as there is any situation where, let's say in the town of Lynn, you're voting on something that would benefit Williams Bay, I need to abstain. And I will tell you, there is one situation that I must continually abstain to, and that is the Village of Williams Bay provides fire coverage for the town of Lynn on the North Shore. Our fire station for the town of Lynn is on the South Shore. Williams Bay is adjacent to the town of Lynn on the North Shore, just a lot more convenient for first responders to get to town of Lynn fires from Williams Bay. So there is a contract between the town of Lynn and the village of Williams Bay, which has to be approved. It's usually a two-year contract. So each time that contract comes up in the town of Lynn, I abstain, which I did. I think it was last year was the first time that it came up since I took this job. And I abstained on approving the contract because, you know, that could be a potential conflict of interest.
Public service, I think back to, wasn't it Teddy Roosevelt who said, if you want a friend, get a dog? Who are the kind of folks, and I'm sure you'll be more diplomatic than me, a nosy news reporter by nature, but who are the kind of folks that raise a stink about, you know, a conflict of interest or whatever? It seems a little far afield for, I mean, I can see it getting into the papers once the stink is raised, but, you know, why would somebody even raise it?
It's difficult for me to answer, Jim, because, you know, I've run a clean office for many years. You look at the town of Lynn. We have, if I'm not mistaken, we have the highest assessed valuation for any township in the state of Wisconsin, $1.5 billion in assessed valuation, probably bigger than a lot of cities in and around the state of Wisconsin itself. It definitely is larger than it's the largest in Walworth County. I'll tell you that by, you know, probably $500 million. We've run a balanced budget. We have probably $2.5 million in the bank, and we don't have a penny of debt. We have a very well-run organization that is fiscally responsible. And why people took this opportunity, I really don't understand, because if we had been running a shady organization, maybe this was the opportunity to go after somebody. I guess you'd have to ask them as to why they felt I wasn't doing a good job. And as I tell anybody, you know, I like what I do, but if somebody wants to do the job more than me and can do it better than me, congratulations to them. You know, I would step aside, or they can run against me in an election, and I would congratulate them and wish them the best should that happen, Jim.
And, of course, as chairman of town of Lynn,
Which comprises most of the area around Geneva Lake, other than probably, you know, Village of Lake Geneva and Fontana and Williams Bay. We know you have to face the music. When, how often are the elections there in Town and Land?
Every 2 years.
And in Williams Bay, where you're appointed, do you have a term limit per se, or you serve at the pleasure of the council?
It's a one-year reappointment is what it is. That as right after the election, so it's usually around the 1st of May is where they do the appointments for the appointed officials for the village.
Moving now into a more area-wide, and WGTD, my goodness, all the way between Milwaukee and I'd say Lake Forest and Delavan and Kenosha. And we make a pretty good stab at Whitewater and towards Madison. There's certainly a lot you have to say from your perspective of how much this Foxconn deal makes. The idea that there they are on the Racine-Kenosha border. And thanks to our two friends, Interstate 43, mm-hmm. State Highway 50. I mean, I still can't, as a person who's been a resident here for going on 5 years, it's like grease lightning going down 43 to Milwaukee. And when I head toward 94 on 50, I'm there before we know it. Are we close enough that the Foxconn deal not only has interest, but real impact on the people of Walworth County?
In the long run, it probably will have a ripple effect. I think Pleasant Prairie is where they're located, if I'm not mistaken, is where they're planning. You know, that's right off 94 and 50 is where, you know, Pleasant Prairie is. And you got a lot of development over there right now. You got the new U-Line factory that's over there. You got Amazon. I think you got FedEx that's over there as well. So you're really getting a hub of large-scale businesses in the area that Foxconn matches up well with. As they continue to infill in that Pleasant Prairie area, you're going to run out of quality housing, you know, right directly in the backyard of those businesses. So I think eventually your ripple effect is going to work its way out into Walworth County and the Geneva Lake area, both, you know, for any of the areas, whether it be Lake Geneva, Williams Bay, Fontana, or the town of Lynn. I think you're going to see, you know, demand for housing in nice neighborhoods, you know, so, you know, got some of the finest neighborhoods, you know, all around here with great schools. The drive may be a little further than people would like if you can stay around the Pleasant Prairie area, but I think we have a much healthier, you know, climate for people to live and operate in around here. Also, eventually, it's possible you might see a ripple effect in terms of suppliers or affiliated businesses.
I was about to ask, there's got to be an angle with all our industrial parks mm-hmm. and our innovative, there's a lot of technology around here, so you see a ripple effect economically in the business end, too.
Absolutely. I think it's, you know, on both ends of the spectrum where there can be, you know, benefit and, you know, the one person who I know has been doing a really good job in and around Walworth County is Derek DiOrio, who operates Walworth County Economic Development. And, you know, he'd probably be the guy to answer the question better for you than me of, you know, what does this mean for Walworth County? But from my perspective, I can see, I think there's opportunities in the right area for related businesses.
And you must be able to read my mind. I imagine you do after your years of public service, but actually Derek is on my schedule for next week to go and ask him. And you're right, he is a one-man band of economic development, and he's been a good friend to WGTD and Community Matters too. He's an excellent interviewer and you know, a tireless advocate for the county. Well, among the industries, when you drive not too far from us on US 14 into Illinois, or you know, other gateways like US 12. You see that big, we've all seen it since 30, 40 years ago, that big outline of Wisconsin on a big sculpture, a big wooden thing. And it has timbers on it that says, I believe, agriculture, tourism, and industry.
And most recently, I forget. I think it was the assistant governor who added the open for business at the bottom of it. When I think about that, and I think about the agriculture part of the triad, boy, you've got some fancy lakefront homes, but you've got some serious agriculture. And was it last year or the year before that everybody in agriculture came to Town of Lynn, not only from the state, but in some cases around the world? Mm-hmm. What was it like for someone who helps run the village? What was it like to have everybody and his brother come to what was a cross between, I think, an Olympics and a World's Fair?
Farm Technology Days is what you are referring to at the Snudden Farms, which was right outside of downtown Zenda, where the town hall is for the town of Lynn.
Beautiful downtown Zenda, and we're going to be talking about that town hall, too.
Absolutely. Quite an interesting event itself from many perspectives. One that you touched on is, number one, the number of people that come from near and far, and how you turn yourself into, 10,000, 15,000 people a day, and I think it was for either 3 or 4 days that come in, that they turn this thing on for, with the amount of vendors and equipment and different demonstrations that they had. It was just a huge event. Was very neat to see of them coming from all those areas. From my perspective, the interesting part with it being in the town of Lynn was being involved with understanding how you manage something like this from behind the scenes, from a fire rescue security standpoint, which was more my focus, and a disaster standpoint, that should something happen during it, how are you prepared and how did people communicate? That was very interesting to see the professionalism of many departments coming together, because that event was much bigger than just the Town of Lynn Fire Department and the Town of Lynn EMS Department, to get coordination from a number of different departments, both in the state of Wisconsin and the state of Illinois, that came to come together to help put that thing together.
Not to overstate the matter, but that's an aspect of civics that I don't think a lot of people realize, but perhaps more so now with all these awful events we have happening in the country, like, in Las Vegas and the country music, and indeed music concerts around the world have had terrorism, both domestic and international. Has it always been, or has it just been since September 11th, that part of the planning comes for a big event? And Lord, we're even doing that now in our churches. Is it pretty much par for the course that you've got to think of that public safety element, along with getting the water there and getting the trucks in and out and finding a place for people to park?
In the case of Farm Technology Days, it was outside in the open in the middle of summer. I think it was either the end of June, July.
Yeah. It was hot. I remember that.
Oh, yeah. And it got up to about 90 degrees, which that was probably the worst part of it, because that helped to knock down some of the attendance just due to the heat itself. But from a disaster standpoint, we had to plan for everything. Tornadoes, raining, lightning. Having evacuations from those sorts, as well as the possibility of, any type of terrorism or, any issues of that sort.
Heck, I think it was only a year or two ago that not that we want to encourage anybody to think of it, but it certainly happens. There was a bomb threat. There was a bomb scare at the Walworth County Fair, the largest fair in Wisconsin. I recall a couple times as a reporter, I was sent scrambling to similar scares at the high school complex here. So, yeah, it's not something you really screw around with. That sounds like a lot of planning goes into it that we never know about to keep us safe.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of professionals behind the scenes to put that together, and it was just very interesting just to, observe, because, I'm not at ground zero with that. I'm just was the figurehead to be kept informed of the situation in case anything would happen, which it didn't. Everything, worked out well from that perspective, but it was quite an education.
Jim, we've reached that point in Community Matters where we've made it halfway through, and we've made it in a very interesting point. But I'm going to remind everybody who's here, who is tuned in on this Saturday at about 11:15 plus about 11:35 this Saturday, and this is Community Matters. Your host Jim McClure, speaking with Jim Weiss, who has a very important role in Walworth County, and that is to have two roles, being the chairman of the town of Lynn and the village administrator of Williams Bay. That's a pretty significant chunk of our coverage area. And Jim, help me out if you're a radio fan, but here's the part where I try and remember all the places to get WGTD. Online, around the world, of course, and we talk about a couple international matters, WGTD.org. And in Lake Geneva, we're at, and Williams Bay and Town of Lynn, we're at 103.3 FM. In Elkhorn, the county seat, Walworth County, 101.7, and of course 91.1, your gateway to public radio out of Kenosha and Racine. So let's move on into the second half, Jim, and let's talk about pizza, my favorite topic. What's a nice guy from Lisle, Illinois, and a relative kid who was getting his master's at Illinois Benedictine doing up here, making, selling, or whatever you did, frozen pizza? First of all, tell us about Hebron and the history there, and I'll help you out if you don't know all of it with the basketball team in 1952.
The 1952 Illinois State Champions, and the what were the brothers' names? Phil and
the two run and gun brothers, but they were the real sensations. And then you had this. It's certainly unusual for 1952.
Judson boys.
The Judson boys, yep, the runners and gunners. And they can still, in their late 70s, early 80s, they can still put it through the hoop. Mm-hmm. Harvard has a wonderful reunion every 5 years. But it was the smallest team. I mean, I think they had 9 guys on the team or 8. And they had like 90 people in the school, of which 40 were boys. Mm-hmm. And back when you didn't have divisions, yeah. These little guys, just like the movie that Gene Hackman starred in, Hoosiers, these guys, including a kid who was 6'11 that had never played basketball until freshman year, went all the way to the top and beat one of the biggest, toughest, meanest teams in the state. So, I mean, Hebron really was a place.
Yep, put it on the map. The water tower is painted like a basketball. Matter of fact, it was right out the front window of Champion Pizza right off Main Street in downtown Hebron. So I could see that on a daily basis.
Pretty easy to know how Champion got the name.
I think we have just identified why it is called Champion Pizza out of Hebron, Illinois. Champion was started in 1981 by a gentleman by the name of Jim Durkee. Jim Durkee was a Lake Geneva individual. Matter of fact, lived in Lynn Township. And had a dream of creating frozen pizza, and back at that point in time, frozen pizza was pretty new to the marketplace. There weren't many competitors.
How long ago was it?
1981.
Okay.
And so with it, he had a pretty good opportunity to find a niche in the neighborhood, and it appeared that he did well with Champion Pizza, but unfortunately, may have been 5 years after he started the business. He died in an untimely manner, and left the business to be figured out. And the family eventually sold the business to a family called Kynell family, which lived just south of State Line Road, just outside of Harvard. And the Kynell family had it and thrived with it for a number of years. Husband and wife team worked together with it, and the husband passed away, and the wife continued for a while, but her health became challenging, and eventually in 2009, she sold the business to our family. The good thing is that, you had an established name and it was a known item. The challenge was that the quality had deteriorated over the last 5 years or so significantly, and a lot of distribution was lost just due to not giving attention to detail. It's a very detail-oriented business. It's a USDA inspected facility. Everything's done by weights. If you ever notice a pizza says 23 ounces on it, you'll have a lady or a guy there from the USDA checking your scale to make sure your pizzas weigh 23 ounces. Because believe me, when you pump out 250,000 pizzas a year, if you can save a dime on that, that's $25,000 there. And they don't like you cheating the consumer. So it took a lot of looking backwards first to rebrand the business, to get the quality back together. The first thing was get the quality back together, get a good quality product. Then number two was to come up with some modern labeling and modern marketing to be able to take that good product back out into the marketplace.
How do you change the quality? I had a fascinating read a few years ago. I forget what it was called, Paper Tiger or whatever. It was the biography of Tom Monahan, who founded Domino's. And he found that once he got beyond three stores and once he got beyond three states, there was always a challenge in the quality. I mean, do you first of all have to address, I mean, what do you address first, where your ingredients are coming from or the manufacturing end of things?
First thing is where the ingredients come from, what ingredients you're using, and making sure that you are buying fresh ingredients. For example, we used fresh sausage, not a pre-cooked nugget on top of the pizza. Many of your places today use a pre-cooked nugget. Fresh sausage, number one, there's greater risk because it needs to be cooked all the way through, so you can't put huge blobs of that on a pizza, number one. But also, you don't want to put old, fresh sausage on that pizza. What we did was we changed our delivery schedule that when the previous owner was there, she was receiving the fresh sausage every 2 weeks. Well, you got to put some in the freezer, you use some of the fresh, then you take it out of the freezer. So you're really using a frozen product, and that takes some of the taste away from the sausage. So what we did was we changed our delivery schedule with the fresh sausage. We had it delivered twice a week. And the reason why is then we never had to put anything into the freezer, and we would get stuff that was made 2 days before it would come to us, just of how the delivery and production schedule was. So you're having 3-4 day old sausage that's going on top of every pizza as it goes out the door. Also, tomato products make a huge difference. There are many differences and just little subtleties to tomato sauce that you got to make sure you get a good quality company that is not acidic and it works well with the product.
You got to pay for it too, don't you? Because I've been to a couple businesses, you know, including here in the Bay, where they cost a bit more, but boy, when you have the product, it's so much better. But how do you keep from losing your financial shorts when you're paying a little more to get better stuff? And I imagine there's thin margins everywhere, especially in 2009 when we were in the middle of that awful recession.
Absolutely. It's a volume-based business. When I took it over, volume was about 50,000 pizzas a year. When I left, volume was just over 150,000 pizzas. It's a lot easier to make a living and do something on 150,000 pizzas a year. But you're absolutely right. You know, the price gets more expensive in the beginning. You know, the place was bleeding. It was. But that was something that was part of the long-term plan, that you had to get the quality in place. You can't ask for an increase in the product until you get the quality product that's there. So the first thing was to concentrate on that. Once you had the quality product, now you can go out and you can demand that extra 50 cents or 75 cents for the pizza, because when you put it side to side with the competition, that's how you do a taste test and you say, which one would you pay more for? And the answer would be Champion Pizza.
Yeah, and all areas have their identifier. I think of Racine and their Danish Kringles, and Champion was kind of the local favorite. How far was your distribution area?
Well, distribution area, probably 50, 60 miles in a radius.
Both states?
Yes, Illinois and Wisconsin. So, you know, you'd go all the way up to Madison, West Bend, Milwaukee, Waukegan. We even had two distributors that worked with us. They went all the way into the city of Chicago and into some of the south suburbs. So it was a pretty large area. That did very well for us. Also, one of the things that as you attempt to increase your distribution, you want to also increase production. And what we found was the opportunity that we had excess capacity for production. And so we found a few other small companies that, restaurants that wanted to make frozen pizzas with their names on. And so what we did is we started private labeling for these people. And what they would do is they'd give us their recipe and their ingredients. And what we did was had to have an agreement that she gave us a full day's worth of production at a minimum. And what we would do in the morning is we'd set up with their ingredients and their formulas. And what we would do is run their pizzas, freeze them up, and next day or two their truck would come and we'd throw them onto there. And they'd take them and they'd go do the distribution and we'd get paid for production. And that helped us quite a bit in overcoming not having full production with Champion Pizza, because it's easier to work people 5 days a week than telling them they're only working 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Quick personal note on Champion Pizza. I moved to Richmond, Illinois in 2009, about the time you moved into the Fontana Town of Lynn area. And I was dating somebody in Genoa City who I knew from childhood, and she introduced me to Champion Pizza. So I started getting it in Richmond, again, which is right where US 12 crosses into Wisconsin from Illinois. And I'd get it at the corner shell. And I loved it. It was great stuff. I'm probably, thanks to you, going to go get one tonight for my Saturday night meal. But the most heartbreaking thing happened, I think it was about 2010. Mm-hmm. So it was under your reign. I was at the shell, and they buried it in the back, mm-hmm. in the freezer, so nobody could see it. I had to search it out. And one day, the owner, who was not very nice, your truck came around, and a husband and wife team, you may know who they were, but a husband and wife team came to give him some fresh ones. And he was saying something to the effect of, you know, in broken English, it's no good, nobody, and it was just the look on their face. Mm-hmm. And my appreciation for the product and knowing that, you know, it was either part or all of their income, not only did it break my heart, but it also broke my sense of what's fair, especially when I was coming there. So three cheers for me, if I may. I'm not trying to get extra pizza. You don't own the joint anymore. But the first thing I did was go up to that manager and I say, you're crazy. One, this is the best pizza we got. And two, why don't you move it where people can see it instead of buried behind the, the Chicago Bears stuff and the lighter fluid? Mm-hmm. Word of mouth is important for any business, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Or city or township.
Yeah, word of mouth is very important, especially for a small manufacturer where you can't compete against the big guys in terms of marketing programs at all. You know, your big guys out there, they got the money. Your little guys, they don't. And, you know, the interesting part, when I went in and I bought the company, I thought, good quality product. I could figure out margins because I had a banking background. I could understand business. I knew how to market. I knew how to build the business. But what I didn't understand was the food service industry, and especially the frozen food area.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about it, grocery stores have limited space to start with. But if I had batteries, I could set up a little end cap anywhere around the store itself. They could give me a little spot, a little 2x2 spot. We could set up our batteries on a little end cap.
And literally, in marketing retail terms, the end cap is that end part of the store, the convenience store, the supermarket, where you see all the Doritos or all the Pepsis on sale, that sort of thing.
You got it. And but with frozen pizza, it's finite. It's got to be in a freezer. And when you go to the store, is there ever any room in that frozen pizza cabinet? It's filled. From top to bottom, left to right. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, even if you go in there with a great product, the challenge that you have is they have to move somebody out. And if you're dealing at a grocery store with the frozen food manager who's just an employee, even if he thinks your product is great, he's not going to benefit from your product because he doesn't get any percentage of the sales. And if he wants to bring your pizza in and turn somebody's take somebody's out, all that is work for him. He's got to remove somebody, and he's got to bring you in. So the key is you had to make sure you got to the person who manages the bottom line, which is either the store manager or the store owner, where you can show them the financial benefit that your pizzas are going to move. And I'll give you an example, Century and Walworth. They weren't in Century, and I finally got an opportunity, thanks to the wonderful Daniels family, to get into Century Pizza or Century Foods with Champion Pizza. Eventually, after we were in there about 3 or 4 years, we had one full freezer door with 12 offerings, and we were the second best-selling pizza behind Tombstone in Century Foods.
I was going to say, you said that there wasn't much in 1981, but boy, I remember when I was in high school in the 70s, Tombstone was it. So to beat them out is really something. Hey, let's switch from pizza, which is sometimes wood-fired, to fire. I think, from this reporter's standpoint, either your greatest contribution or the most noteworthy thing that has happened under your time in Town of Lynn was the addition of the fireboat a couple years ago. How important is a fireboat when you got a township that's on both sides of the darn lake? And tell me about how that came to be. And also, if my memory is right, that darn thing was used almost right away in a couple different cases.
The fireboat's a curious one in the way that it came about. As you alluded to already, Jim, Town of Lynn encompasses over 60% of the shore of Geneva Lake, and it's not contiguous. The township is split up into some on the north shore of the town of Geneva Lake and a good portion on the south shore of Geneva Lake. So we have our own challenges logistically because you got to get around that big puddle to service both areas. Our fire department, which was the most instrumental in it, kept saying, we need to get a boat. We need to fight these fires. We have to do things. And for a couple of years, the answer was, too expensive. We can't do that. Too expensive. We can't do that. You know, what does this thing cost? $325,000. Ooh, geez. You know, can we get some help from neighbors? Well, you know, that doesn't always work well. And we gave the challenge out to the fire department of, you know, how can we fund this thing? How can we develop a personal, a private and public relationship to get something like this to work? And Dan Pitt and Jason Smith on our fire department were very instrumental in reaching out to the Geneva Lake Association, which is an association of mainly lakefront owners or people who are in associations in and around Geneva Lake. And through their president at that time, Jim G., then the new president, Jack Goggin, and really, really a lady by the name of Diana Coleman. They went out and started soliciting the members of the Geneva Lake Association. And eventually what happened was the Geneva Lake Association raised enough money to purchase the boat as well as the first year of maintenance and training for the boat and donated it to the town of Lynn. Where then they said, we'll, you know, donate it to the town of Lynn. If then you maintain it and you utilize it on all of Geneva Lake for all of the municipalities around us.
We've got about 3 minutes left, Jim. I think it's important to point out and help me out, but I recall there was a surprising immediate use for that boat, or at least a surprising immediate effect where they had to go out and fight a fire.
What this boat has is it has a pump on it that it can do two things. Either one, it can shoot water off of the boat through a pump to get to a house, or number two, it has attachments on it where it can be a floating fire hydrant where they can get close to the shore, they can put a hose on it and hook it up to a pumper so they have a constant source of water.
You know, Town of Lynn really has a wonderful distinction in the minute or so we have left. I love the town hall. When I first met you 2 years ago, you know, I walked in and we were going to do a quick story on the voting for the fireboat. Something about that hall And at that time, it was a year short of being 100 years old. But you walk in, you see the old-time stuff on the wall. You see the old pictures from Norman Rockwell, Freedom of Assembly and all that. Isn't it really cool to roll up your sleeves and do business in a historic structure like that?
It's a great place to operate out of it. And what you said about